The Final Furlong Podcast is proudly brought to you by Tote. Think you can't get better value? Think again. 10% bigger dividends when you bet direct with Tote Plus at tote.co.uk.
And with Royal Ascot inside, it is an absolute pleasure to be joined once again by the champion jockey, Oisin Murphy. Oisin, welcome back to the Final Furlong Podcast.
Emma, thanks very much for having me on. Plenty to look forward to over the next week or so. Please, God.
Yeah, it's going to be a big, big week. How do you feel about the so-called lack of crowds for the Royal meeting? How did you feel that went last year?
It was really strange last year because in years gone by, we're used to a massive noise and reception. And there's a great buzz about the place, and obviously there was no one there last year apart from trainers. And I think we're permitted to have 12,000 this year. Is that so?
Yeah, about that. Yeah.
And at least it'll be 12,000 racing fans, not people that are just going out for the fashion and stuff. And I know Royal Ascot, a huge part of the week is fashion and the social event. But I hope the people that'll be going there this year will appreciate the fact that the top class horses are on show, and it's incredible quality racing.
Yeah, for a second there I was going to say, did the champion jockey just say it's great that the fashion's going to be back on show? But then you corrected yourself
No,
hang on, this is like world class racehorses on show. Can we focus on that,
sure,
please, and not the fashion? Thanks very much.
Yeah, that's for sure.
No digs at certain people. ITV, come on now, do us a favor. Less scotch eggs, more let's focus on who we think is going to win the races. And we're not just going to get your insight into you're fully booked out for day one, and I'm sure the same thing will come through for day two. But hopefully it'll be a busy week for you in total, and I'm sure that it will be. But you're getting things off in the opening race, which thankfully we've reverted back to the Queen Anne being the opening race. And that's Sir Busker, who currently is a double-figure price. Look, the focus of attention here is mostly going to be on Palace Pier, who was devastatingly impressive last time out. But what do you make of your own chances?
Sir Busker's working well, and he obviously loves the straight course at Ascot. He was a Royal Ascot winner last year. It's a huge step up in class. He's been very competitive in group races. I think Palace Pier is a monster. I was really impressed with him in the lockage. Obviously, I followed him most of the race, and I was looking at his backside for the last two furlongs. He's just a monster horse, and it would be nice if Sir Busker could run the first three. He's got lovely owners, and they're realists, and the horse goes there in good shape.
Great to hear that there's realistic owners. The ride that you gave Lady Beaufort in the lockage was absolutely sensational, and I was certainly not expecting her to put up that good a performance. Do you think that this, because you've described Palace Pier as a monster, so that sort of gives the game away, but do you think that the likes of Coolmore, if they fire both Order of Australia and Lope Fernandez, and it's looking like they will fire both of them at it, Lope Fernandez, the wheels just wouldn't have spun on that ground at Newbury, whereas the forecast good ground at Ascot, and it might even be a little bit better, maybe PJ McDonald and Top Rank might think that they could get a little bit closer, or is this just a case of as long as he's sound, Frankie will be hopefully doing a flying dismount. He might need some cushions around in order to do so properly, but hopefully he'll be doing a flying dismount.
Yeah, I have massive respect for Palace Pier, and I rode Lady Beaufort quietly, but she jumps awkwardly, and I wanted to follow and get a toe into it. I thought the pace was going to be honest, and it was. Palace Pier literally took off when Frankie got into the clear 2.5 down, and he's going to be very, very hard to beat at Ascot. Though we can talk about Aidan's runners, Order of Australia finished the year with a Breeders' Cup victory. Have to respect him. Lope Fernandez was disappointing in the lockage, but as you say, ground would have been too slow. Top Rank is a genuine group performer, but whether he can mix it at Group 1 level remains to be seen. So, it's Palace Pier's race to lose, I believe.
Yeah, I would completely agree with you. I'm probably going to try and do some kind of scumbag place bet / each way bet on the day, just because 2 to 5 shots in the lock-in jam aren't really my thing in Group 1 company. But hey, If you want to put him into your multiple, you get the Oisin Murphy seal of approval there. And it will be great for racing if we get another superstar. The Coventry, you've already been booked for this race. You're going to be on board a Berwickshire Shadow, or Berkshire. Yeah. Berkshire Shadow, I should probably say, to get the pronunciation absolutely spot on. What can you tell us about Berkshire Shadow?
He is a smashing horse, still a touch raw. He's got loads of scope. We were delighted with him at Newbury. He fell out of the stalls and then he ran on and hit the line well. The form has worked out a little bit, but it's also, you can pick holes in it. Coventry is normally the hardest two-year-old race to win at Ascot. Some superstars have won it in the past, and this fella is going to be a miler next year, but I like him plenty and I hope he'll run a big race for his owner, who is a really, really good man, and he's come into the sport in the last 5 or 6 years and he's gone from one horse to probably 10 or so. So this is an exciting day for him.
I'd imagine there were a few offers that were made as well, and perhaps Cheveley Park were kicking themselves that, look, they are in the industry of breeding horses and selling them, but in the scheme of things, this horse was sold for 40,000 as a yearling, which in flat racing terms is not a huge amount. I'm pretty certain this horse could go through the ring before Royal Ascot and make considerably more just to have a runner on the day. But he also beat some pretty high profile runners on the day. Is the only thing that would be a drawback to him, because Andrew was making all the right noises and you've just done the same thing, is that he's had the one run and won, and therefore there's a slight lack of experience. Aidan O'Brien's talked about that in the past, that it is kind of unfortunate that you have to go to Royal Ascot in the back of just the one run, and that's how it sometimes works out. Is that a disadvantage, or do you just take that as, well, he was good enough to give away ground and still win, so I'll take that?
Yeah, I'm actually looking through the race as we speak now, and he did well to win. He belongs in the race. I believe it's quite open from the point of view. Obviously, Wesley Ward's horse, Coffee Maker, whatever his name is.
Coffee Maker!
That filly is going to start favoured, and she's grabbing £3 off the colts. Jonica loves his horse, Masato, is that what it's called? The territory's colt, and he's had two runs, so a bit of experience. Aidan has loads in there. Ebro River was impressive at Sandown. If he relaxes, he'll improve for the step up and trip, but he'll need to get to the start. He's quite highly strong in a relaxed manner. John and Thady Gosden have two smashing colts. Debab was impressive in a very hot race at Leicester. He did it very well. He ran an RPR 92, a breezer by Nona Never. He will know his job. I'm really taken aback by his performance. Tolstoy, who Frankie is going to partner, and I suppose that's due to the owner more than anything else, won well at Yarmouth. I rode in the race. It was a hack and sprint sort of race. And Angel Blur is 20-1, and this horse of Rafe Beckett's, a Dark Angel colt, has done nothing but improve, and he's going to be hitting the line strong. So, out of the Galileo Mare. So, really, really open race. These top races should be of major quality, and it's just, there's plenty of it in the Coventry.
It's interesting how you talk about Frankie riding more so for the owner. Do you think that if you were given the choice, you would then presumably choose the Known Lane Ever? You'd be going for Rab Halvan's mount?
No doubt. Absolutely no doubt. And I ride in Debab's race as well? I was supposed to, and my horse was withdrawn to start, Wild Tiger. No doubt about it. I would be riding Debab and not Tolstoy.
Oh, right. And that is very, very useful information. The other useful bit of information is Sarah Lynham telling us that she had heard the Acropolis is the best horse that Aidan O'Brien has as a juvenile this season. And that was after he'd been beaten on debut at the Curragh and before he went and won impressively at the Stoll. So hopefully Final Formal Podcast listeners took advantage of the 5-4 that was on offer, a gift at the Stoll. And we'll see if this Son of Churchill turns up in this race. You mentioned Dunica's horse. The real shame there is that Castle Star doesn't line up. They're going to go
for Tommy Stack's horse.
I'm really sorry that he doesn't go there. I understand going for the railway instead, but And that could very well be the fact that they don't know what Wesley has. They don't know what you have. They don't know what John and Teddy Gosden have. But and there's also the risk that Aidan O'Brien's The Acropolis or The Entertainer, perhaps, who was disappointing last time out, maybe as a Caravaggio who won this race, they may very well want to go and prove things with him. But we'll see. It's going to be a fascinating race. But I think the fact that Oisin is choosing the John and Thady Gosden outsider, supposedly, at least according to the betting in Dareb, is a very, very, very interesting piece of information that all of us, certainly including myself, should be taking full advantage of. That's number 9. And currently, you can get about 20s about Dareb. Rab Havlin could be in for a terrific ride there. We'll learn more from Aidan O'Brien a little bit later on in terms of his running plans and see what the story is. The King's Stand, Group 1. So Batash, he finally got it done last year. With the fact that it's a 12,000 crowd, so he was definitely aided by a lack of a crowd last year. I think that's pretty fair to say. The fact that there's only going to be 12,000 there and Royal Ascot is so vast and expansive, he should get away with it again this year, shouldn't he?
Yeah. I'd just be worried about he hasn't had a smooth run into Ascot. He obviously had setbacks over the winter. He's getting older. It's not a very strong race. There isn't much in there to beat him, in my opinion. Winter Power is an improver. She's getting a ton of weight off him. If I was you who wants to have a bet, or the listeners, I'd be punting Winter Power at 9-2 over Batash at 7-4 with all the unknowns and uncertainties. Oxstead hasn't been at his best this year, and I can't really see him bouncing back to his best. Extravagant Kid, trained by Irishman Brendan Walsh, has obviously been targeted at this race. We're going to run King's Lynn in the race, who is an improver, but he's going to need to improve another. He ran to 107 at Haydock in the handicapper's opinion, and he's going to need to run to another £7 better than that to win this race. But I can't see Batash running to 123. He's obviously been very consistent. If you look through his form on RPRs, he ran to 123, 122, and 123 on his final three starts of 2020, or his only three starts of 2020. And if he does that, then he won't be beaten, but there's too much uncertainty.
What is the talk then about him? Because you were saying about the fact that there has been injury issues, and Charlie Hills, to be fair, hasn't been quiet about that. But when you're writing pieces of work and you're in the jockey's room or even in the car on the way to the races, normally we've seen Batash at this stage. I was kind of putting it down to the ground. But that would worry me about a horse who's such a short price favorite, particularly when you're looking at a Group 1 race and you have an improver like Winter Power in there. And even the Wesley Award horse, Maven, who did travel over to Royal Ascot 2 years ago and missed it on the day, which broke Peter Fornital, a longtime contributor who will be back on the show very soon's heart. He was devastated because I don't think it was a money back situation for him. But your horse, King's Lynn, you're riding for the Queen on the day as well. So what's your thoughts there? A winner last time out at Haydock, fine form the time before that as well, behind Came from the Dark and El Astronaute. Place prospects?
Yeah, I hope so. He is improving, but this is a step up, and it's the right race for him. I feel he will have too much weight in the Wokingham, and Andrew and I both feel that we'd like to continue to explore the 5 furlong option with him, and unless something dramatically changes and Her Majesty and John Warren change their mind, that she will be running. Or he will be running in the King's Stand, yeah.
And overall, just given the doubts surrounding Batash, it's Winter Power for you.
Yeah, I think so. She's a front runner, and she's improving. And yeah, I just have a she's getting a ton of weight off him as well. And she's so small, you know, it's hard for three-year-old sprinters stepping up in class against older horses, but she's about 15 hands. She's like a bull. So she will be much more mature than some or a lot of three-year-olds.
Okay. I like it, particularly given her price as well against a short price favorite like him, who will probably only shorten unless Final Furlong podcast listeners take a listen to what Oisin has just said and go, I'm going to take on Batash this year. Tactical is a big price in the St. James's Palace Stakes. Now, this is going to be a fascinating race, but what can you tell us about how Tactical is working and how pleased you are with him?
I think we'll wait for the jersey with him again. It'll be up to Her Majesty and John Warren, and we need to finalise those plans probably tomorrow. Well, it'll be Saturday, I'd say. But yeah, it's a very hot race, that St. James's Palace, and if Poetic Flair backs up again, he's an incredibly tough horse, and I applaud the way they've campaigned him. Highland Avenue for me, though, and I honestly don't feel we need to discuss any other horse other than this thing. If he lines up and goes forward, he hated the ground at Sandown. It was soft. He's an absolute monster. I rode in the field in stakes when he won, and I was in behind on Youth Spirit, who obviously isn't a bad horse. And when Doyler gave him the giddy up, he absolutely took off. And I said to James and I said to Charlie Appleby after the race that fella could win a Guineas. And obviously, they've been slowly with him. He was quite immature. And they ran him at Sandown and he disappointed. But I think there was lots of excuses. And on fast ground, I think he's a machine. I know Battleground, there's been some talk about him and whatever else, but I've got a very high opinion of Highland Avenue, and Mustadaf has his behaviour problems. He won't be easy at Ascot. He's obviously unbeaten, but I just have a feeling.
And you feel then that the current 5-1 versus the 7-2 about Mustadaf, because there is the attraction about an unbeaten horse that really, it was just an experience did for Highland Avenue on the day, or the ground really that did for Highland Avenue on the day, but that mistake won't happen again.
Just the ground. He's by Dubawi out of Shamardown there. You know, she was top class herself, Lumiere, and just as a physical level, he's big, grey, he's an absolute monster. Take nothing away from Mustadaf, because he's actually a similar type, but he's brown. She wanted fast ground herself, Lumiere, you know. She was very good.
Sold. Another Group/Grade 1 goes to Godolphin. I think the Belmont, the Derby, St. James's Palace Stakes, Highland Avenue.
They're flying, aren't they?
They really are flying. But that line from you, we don't need to spend much time talking about this for us. It's all about Highland Avenue. Done. Sold. How much can we get on? That brings us to the Ascot Stakes then. So you are booked to ride Untold Story. Everything in here, with the exception of the William Mullins Battalion, are short prices. And Emmett Mullins, to be fair, is getting in on the act as well. So obviously he's going to, given his record of coming over to the UK, is going to be a short price. But how happy are you with your horse? Have you done any work with him lately?
He's an improver. He's not guaranteed to stay. He's got a great mind. He relaxes super, which is always a big help. He goes to sleep in behind. Newmarket, he kept going. The winner made all that day. He's a proper stayer. This is often an Irish trainer's race, and I'd imagine it will be again. There's a Mullins first four in the betting, and, you know, I don't know if I should have tried to get on Saddle D or whatever its name is, or Cape Gentleman. They don't seem to be jocked up yet, but I've ridden a Royal Ascot winner for Saeed before, and I'd like to ride another one for him.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see Saeed back in the winner's enclosure too, because things are just a little bit quiet for him at the moment. So, look, flat horses have won this race in the past. It has been a jumper's benefit in recent years.
Yeah.
And William Mullins has had a particularly good record in the race in recent years too. I think at least four in the last 10. And Ryan Moore has been on a few of those as well. So we shall see. We shall see. But you're happy with Saeed's horse?
Yeah, I am. He's got the right profile. And he, whether he stays 2.5 miles is an unknown, but he's definitely going to improve for going up to a mile six and 2 miles, you know. Like his brother winning story stayed 2 miles and the dam is out of, or sorry, the dam's by Darshan, so it's screaming long distances.
Yeah, what interests me is that he's got one that's a shorter price, yet you're jocked up on Untold Story, and I'd happily take the 20s in that instance, and maybe we should be doing exactly that. The Wolverton then, so this would normally be the wrap-up race, but things have changed this year at Royal Ascot. We will now extend into after 6 o'clock. Do you think that's the right way to play it at Royal Ascot for 2021?
Look, I suppose there was the betting turnover last year was good, and I think they've given some thought and put some thought into this decision. So from a jockey's point of view, it means extra chances to ride Royal Ascot winners, and we all know how important that is.
Yeah, it's a long day though.
It is a long day, but it's not an early start, a 2:30, and the buzz and excitement, it'll be a long day by Saturday if I still haven't ridden a winner, but please God, that isn't the case.
Yeah, well, hopefully you'll have been banging in the winners by that point and continuing to bang them in by Saturday. But yeah, it is like 5 days, 2:30 race start up until 6:10. Like from my experience of doing the broadcasting from Royal Ascot 2 years in a row, geez, I was absolutely wrecked about 2 weeks after it. And I didn't have to starve myself to go and compete and ride races out on the track. So I don't know how you do it, particularly in the humidity and the heat. So Felix was last seen finishing behind Lord North at Maidan, ran an absolute stormer. You were on board that day, and a single figure prize for this race.
Yeah, he's been trained for it. I haven't sat in him at home recently, but I know the horse well. He's going to get back in the run. I'm going to need to find some space later on. Just looking through the race, I think Faisal badly needed the run at Windsor. I think he'll improve a lot. Eucan Glen was given a great ride by Paul Mulrennan, probably handled the ground better than most. Sangarius was a little bit unlucky from the point of view that he definitely wants top of the ground, and it was slow at Sandown. I forgive him a little bit. They say he won on soft at Royal Ascot before, but it wasn't soft ground. The times proved that it wasn't actually that slow. It was 2.96 slow off standard. That's like not soft ground. But anyway, so forgive Sangarius. Solid Stone is an interesting one. I think he's been well placed, and I wouldn't be too strong on him. Joseph has got Patrick Sarsfields in there. Obviously, this has been the plan. He's had a prep run, did nothing wrong at the Curra. A horse who's well-travelled, been to Germany and France and the whole shebang. I had plenty of options here. Storm, he was given a good ride. Storm Antarctic when he won at Sandown. I just think, you know, Felix has less miles on the clock, and he goes in with a decent profile. Blue Cup is going to back up from the Epsom race. He'll be a hard ride at Ascot. You know, that 10 furling start runs downhill, and okay, the pace of the race is probably going to be stronger than your average handicap, but if he gets into if William gets into a battle with him, then he'd be quite keen. But I do have a fair bit of respect for the horse.
Okay, but as you were saying, there were offers there, but you wanted to stick with Felix, and I think that says an awful lot. And we can get close enough to tens about him, so I don't know how much longer that's going to last by the time this podcast goes out, but we'll...
Yeah, I mean, he was well-placed in Dubai, but you can't knock the form too much. And, you know, if the ones around him were running in the Wolverton, they'd be... You think they'd have had a decent chance.
Yeah, big time. And he is getting weight from some rivals as well. So, no, a lot to be very happy about there with Felix. Currently number 11 And that's Oisin for Marc Abadi. So the final race then of the day sees another William Mullins horse in here. So this is a mile six Copper Horse Stakes, and you will be on board Brilliant Light, 20-1 shot as we currently talk. Is that an insult to the horse's chances, in your opinion?
So I rode this fellow work before he went to Wolverhampton last year, and then after Wolverhampton when he went to Sandown, and he was very, very good work, and I always thought he would end up being a group horse. Dubai didn't go to plan for him for whatever reason. He's come back and freshened up. I'd be disappointed if he wasn't better than 101. The trip will be no problem. He wants a mile six. There's probably a few horses in this race that you could say the same thing for, although they've had lots of action. But like, you know, William Haggis has two here, Roberto Escobar and Favourite Moon, who don't have many miles on the clock. And no doubt he didn't have a Royal Ascot winner last year, I don't think. So he would have been planning certain horses for certain races for a long time, and that might be the case. I'd just keep an eye on jockey bookings, depending on which one Tom Marquand is on, and if Kieran Fallon rides the other one, it'll be interesting.
Okay. Any concern for you about, because the runners to form on Racing Post is 59% for Saeed Bin Sarour, but compared to Charlie Appleby, like it's apples and oranges. Like they're for some reason, he's just not banging them in. But when it comes to Royal Ascot, Saeed Bin Sarour knows exactly where the winner's enclosure is, and he knows how to target a horse, and particularly target a horse from Maidan to the Royal Meeting as well. So maybe this jump up and trip is going to bring out the necessary improvement in him, particularly in handicap company.
Yeah, I hope so. He's a gorgeous, easy horse to ride, and I haven't ridden him work this year, but I hope they wouldn't be put me on him if they didn't like him and the horse wasn't in good shape.
They wouldn't do that. No way would they do that. Day two. So you're starting off as everyone is, with the Queen Mary. But you start off with Desert Dreamer, who, as we currently record, is around about a 10-1 shot. Stuart Williams, two runs, two wins. And while they haven't necessarily been by devastatingly large margins, we're talking about a horse who's run over 5 and 6 furlongs, both on good ground, and on both times got the job done. Surprise winner, it's fair to say, under Holly Doyle first time out. It certainly didn't seem to be expected by the market, but very much expected next time out. And you've managed to secure the ride. I presume this is something you're very, very pleased about.
Yeah, the form of that Newmarket 5 furlong race is so, so strong. I mean, the amount of winners that have come out of it, Nymphadora being one, Amber Dew being another, Ballerina Lady being another. I mean, it was just a very strong race. And Beautiful Sunshine's won twice since, won a listed race at Sandown afterwards. She is an absolute speedball ass. Her next start over 6, Shawnee had to hold on to her until like the last furlong. He got kind of stuck behind less talented rivals, but he gave her a super ride, because I don't think she wants to go 6 furlongs at this stage. I have respect for the American horses. Wesley's bringing over John Velasquez. He's going to ride Twilight Gleaming. I saw her the other morning. She's travelled well. Aidan obviously has this thing called Yet, who won at Dundalk by Warfront out of Butterflies. That could be anything. George Arnold's bringing one over. Frankie's been booked for that. Nymphadora I know very well. I rode her on her first start. And then Jason rode her in the listed race at York and managed to convince the owner to keep him on her and not me. So well done, Jason. If you go down through, there's plenty of fillies there with one start to one win. And I like the Queen Mary. I managed to win it before, and I think this filly, although she needs to improve on what she's achieved, I think there's plenty of upside to her.
I like the way you say Aidan's bringing over this yoke. Yes.
Yeah, sorry. For the non-Irish listeners, doesn't mean a bad horse.
Oh, exactly. No.
Yeah, a horse.
No, exactly. The thing that interests me about her is that she's coming from the all-weather, which Aidan has been leaning on more and more and more with Dundalk. And all-weather form translates very well at Royal Ascot. It's just a case of how fast is this horse, because in the last 10 years, Aidan hasn't won it, whereas Wesley has. And the fact that he's chosen to run Coffee Maker in the Coventry and have Johnny Velasquez over to ride this horse. I know that it's, spoiler alert, a horse that Pete Fornatel is quite keen on. So interesting that you're saying that you saw her the other day and that you seem to be taken with her. Is Twilight Gleaming a typical bull of a Wesley Ward horse?
Yeah, she's twice the size of our English and Irish trained two-year-olds. She's a big, imposing. She looks like a colt.
What does he feed them? Like, seriously, what does he feed them? It's remarkable. Just like you think of a horse like Acapulco and Lady Aurelia, obviously, and No Name Ever. You know, I remember seeing No Name Ever for the first time in the flesh at Coolmore and going, Jesus Christ, the size of that thing. And he needs five handlers around him. at all times, which is just to show you how well Frankie did to go and win on him. How confident are you, or is it this a case of that you think, right, respect Aidan O'Brien, respect to Wesley Ward, but like would you swap yours?
The field was very good 10 days ago, and you know, I would never be riding Wesley's two-year-old or Aidan's two-year-old, so I can't. It didn't really cross my mind, but of the English trained ones, I think she goes there with a very strong chance.
Oh, with that attitude, you won't be. You never know.
This year, anyway, I wouldn't be riding.
Exactly, exactly, Oisín, exactly. We can put in the call and see what the story is. So ruling then in the Queen's Vase, you ride in the 5-3. On ITV.
Yeah.
So this is going to be a really competitive, very interesting race. There's a number of bookmakers who don't want to bet on this just yet because they don't seem to have enough info. But Wordsworth is a surprising favorite to me in my mind, in that I didn't like his performance the last time. I much preferred Sir Lucan, and I think he goes elsewhere later in the week. But again, we'll find out more from Aidan O'Brien later. Perhaps there was an issue with him when he was beaten, and his form ties in with High Definition. So those desperately clinging on to the hope that High Definition is going to make it into a good horse will, I'm sure, be hoping. But you are riding for an O'Brien. It's Joseph, and this is for your boss at Qatar Racing. Ruling. So what have you made of his performances, and what's Joseph told you about the reports from Declan and Shane on his last two starts this year?
Yeah, he's obviously still a maiden, but his form was very good when runner-up in that listed race, and I think he didn't do anything wrong, and he's going to improve for a step-up and trip. He's going to have multiple entries at Ascot, so I don't know if he's going to end up lining up on the Wednesday, but let's see. I've won this race before. Aidan's going to have plenty in it, and you probably really respect whatever he runs. You know, he tends to farm these type of races all over Ireland and England. So yeah, of the English train runners, I've had a look through Recovery Run, I know well, and I don't think he's an improver, unfortunately. And it might not be a big field. There's not loads and loads of entries. It'll be interesting. There's lots of lowly rated horses, so let's see.
I remember being there in, I want to say 2018, there were 12 runners and Aidan had the 1-2-3.
Yeah, I mean, there we go. That's, it just goes to show, you know, he holds lots of, many of his three-year-old colts have pedigrees that would enable them to stay these sort of distances, and you know, they go to the races with good profiles.
Yeah, and that was Kew Gardens, by the way, who was a damn good horse in his day, and he also won this with Leading Light as well, and went on to win a St. Ledger and a Gold Cup. So,
sure.
absolutely a horse that will be of whoever he runs is going to be of interest. But right now, you're happy enough with ruling. Assuming ruling actually runs, there are other options.
Yeah, if the horse could run a big race, and yeah, he belongs in that race. So I'm happy that they've jocked me up on him anyway.
Yeah, I should think so. Right, so Lady Beauthorpe. So we get to talk about Lady Beauthorpe. Is she going to run in the Duke of Cambridge?
She is. I won't be riding her. Schumacher's going to get back on her. I will keep the ride on Bounce the Blues for Andrew and Barbara Keller. We had a Group 1 winner in 2017 with Blonde Me. And she should have won that race at Linkfield. I got stuck in traffic. It was my fault. Just a messy race. We went steady and I followed the wrong one. Parents' Prayer is obviously one I won on last week at Epsom, and she's an improver and she loves fast ground, and I think she can run well. Lady Beauthorpe just won't want to super fast, but I'd imagine she'll have to take her chance anyway.
For all that, you're very hard on yourself, by the way, and I quite admire that. But I mean, look, we've said that before too on the podcast. Is she not a little bit underpriced here? Because you yourself were saying that you gave her a quiet ride in the Loch Inch. It's not like the form can be taken literally. Like Palace Pier won that race comfortably, but she's priced as though she nearly beat Palace Pier. That's not really what happened. It's not the and therefore you could look at Full something store. You could look at something like Champers Elise, who has disappointed not once but twice this year, but is a genuine Group 1 horse. And there's plenty of others, including the mount that you're going to be on as well in Bounce the Blues, who could very easily bounce back to 2020 form, and if she does so.
I actually think there's lots of horses in this race that you would be concerned that they could do some damage to the favourite. Queen Power, brilliant at York. She actually relaxed for once, and you could see the quality come to the fore. Doubler Bubble is an improver. I've got a lot of respect for her, and she would be a brilliant ride in the race. I don't think we've seen the best of her yet. Onassis and Lavender's Bleu, I think they've kind of shown how good they are. Parents' Prayer is an improver, and the rest of them, I don't think we really need to talk about. So that's kind of how I feel about the race.
All due respect, but we're skipping and moving on. Your thoughts on the Prince of Wales Stakes?
Unfortunately, I won't be involved. It was great to hear Love will be lining up. Lord North was very good early in the year. Really, really impressive in Dubai. He's a class horse. Thought he achieved plenty. Thought James Doyle gave him a super ride to win the Prince of Wales last year, and you know, you'd have to respect him. If Love is at her best, though, she's getting £3 off him, she'd be very good. And again, I don't think we need to talk about the rest. I think it's going to be a small field, and it's a two-horse race.
What was your take on Armory on his comeback at Chester? Because my impression of him was when he went to Australia, it was probably to sell him, and then he ran really well, and they went, actually, let's hold on to him and bring him back.
Yeah. I don't think he's up to beating Love or Lord North. That's the bottom line. He might win a Group 1 in Australia. It's highly likely.
Take that, Aussies! It's not just us coming for you. It's Oisin Murphy coming for you as well. Coming from the top. Any concern, given that Lord North is not the price that he was last year, that he hasn't had a prep run? That the last time we saw him was Maidan, and that was 81 days ago. Is there any concern in the back of your mind about that?
No, they wouldn't have wanted to run him before this.
That'll do nicely for me. So this brings us then to your final ride on the day, that we know of anyway, and that's Spring is Sprung. So this is in the 5:35, the Windsor Castle Stakes, again for the Queen. What can you tell us about Spring is Sprung?
Very open race. Thrilled with him at home. His work has improved so much. He's quite a gross horse. He carries a lot of weight. He's like me when I'm retired from racing. He's quite a chubby little fella. He's quite talented, very open race. Windsor Castle, you never really know what's going to happen, but he's an easy ride. I'm going to go forward on him. He's going to stay six next year. I actually used to ride his mother. Yeah.
Careful now, that's a real, you've just dropped yourself into a real Ted Walshism there.
I'm very, very happy that that I'll be riding him. And it's nice to be riding so many for the Queen at this meeting.
Oh yeah, fantastic. And particularly given the fact that she'll actually get to be there this year. So
sure.
I mean, we know that she watches racing every week and does her lucky 15s and lucky 31s, but it will be brilliant that she's actually there. Have they actually said if there's going to be a royal parade before racing or not?
No, they haven't, so it'll be interesting to see what happens. We'll find out on Tuesday.
Yeah, I like that pomp and ceremony. I would quite like to see that return, but we'll have to wait and see. In terms of stallions who have impressed you this year for speed, Caravaggio is very much up there, and Caravaggio is represented in this race, but is there anything else that you think is just an out and out bred for speed?
Our dad, Son of Kordiak, Royal Ascot winner himself under Rab Havlin, John Gosden, think he's a sire to follow, and I think he can make a big splash as the quality in there as he covers improves.
Ardad, make sure that you're taking note of his progeny. Your overall picture for the week, for the rest of the week, Stradivarius is back for a fourth Gold Cup to try and emulate Yates, and plenty of other big stories as well. What are you most looking forward to seeing over the next remaining 3 days of Royal Ascot?
Well, on a personal level, I'm looking forward to three horses. Masakala in the Chesham, Dragon Symbol in the Commonwealth, and Starman in the Diamond Jubilee. And from a racing fan's point of view, I can't wait to see Stradivarius in the Ascot Gold Cup.
Do you think he'll do it?
Yeah, I think he will. I think there's nothing there to beat him. And I've seen him at home recently and he's looks great. He's fit. And
it'd be some story. It really would be some story. Just those three horses that you're looking forward to again?
Starman in the Diamond Jubilee, Dragon Symbol in the Commonwealth, and Masakala in the Chesham.
Don't say you weren't told by Oisín Murphy on the Final Furlong podcast. Oisín, a pleasure as always. Very best of luck to you. Please God, we'll get to talk to you after you've had lots of success. But come home safe, enjoy the week, and the best of luck to you for Royal Ascot 2021.
Thanks very much, Emmett. Cheers.
The Final Furlong podcast is brought to you by Tote.
Delighted to say that once again we are joined by the legend that is Aidan O'Brien. Thank you very much for joining us again on the Final Furlong podcast.
It's a pleasure, Emmett.
You were very kind to tell us that Royal Ascot is incredibly important to the whole operation. And 21 years ago, you trained your first winner there, and his statue is in Ballydoyle, and that's Giant's Causeway. As day one approaches, how much excitement is there, and how much, in terms of finalising of your team, has that actually been put in place?
Yeah, no, sure. Obviously, no, thanks to Emma. It's obviously very important. It's obviously seriously important to everybody. And the team is kind of the bones of it are there that kind of we know from the entries. But it is changing all the time, and the horses have to go through all their tests and all that. But everything seems to be going okay so far anyway, Emma.
Okay, well, you've got two entries in the Queen Anne. Will both Order of Australia, who both yourself and your wife Anne-Marie bred, and you've done exceptionally well with that mare, might I add, and Lope Fernandez, who disappointed in the Lockinge, but really the wheels wouldn't spun on that ground, back to good ground at Ascot, will both take their chance?
Yeah, that's the plan anyway, Emmett. It's always been the plan for Order of Australia and obviously for Lupi as well. So Lupi ran in, we think it was the bad ground in Newbury, just didn't suit him. But he seems in good form since then. And the plan is for both to run at the moment.
Your team then for the Coventry, right now it's Catamusto, Almafi Coast, the Entertainer, who's a Caravaggio, and the Acropolis, who I was really impressed with at Listowel the last day. Is it possible they could all take their chance?
No, only the plan is just the one. The Acropolis is going. We were delighted with him in Listowel. And the plan is for him to just run by himself, really.
He goes there with the benefit of two runs as well. He's also by Churchill, a Royal Ascot winner as a juvenile. And the fact that you're just sending the one sends out a pretty powerful message, I think, too.
Yeah, we always liked him, Emmett. And we were a little bit disappointed in the first day, but they went steady and he just got caught a little bit green in the middle of the race when they did quicken, but he ran very well, and that's why it was great to have the race in Listowel, just to go back and see how much he learned or how much he had came forward, and and I think there was a swing around of 8 lengths from his quarter run. So no, we were delighted with that, really.
Yeah, he looks a very, very exciting prospect, and best of luck to you in your pursuit of winning yet another Coventry Stakes. In the St. James's Palace Stakes, a couple of horses looking to bounce back. Wembley, no getting away from the fact that he's been disappointing this year. Battleground, we've only seen the once. You seem to be adamant that there were excuses for Newmarket. And again, a case of he was successful there last year, back on better ground, things could change. How have they done physically? You've also got two outsiders in there as well. So could there be a horse that perhaps goes and makes the running?
Yeah, no, at the moment, it's probably only the two are going to run. And listen, Torbjorn could run, but the plan is for the two to run, Wembley and Battleground. Wembley obviously ran disappointment to Corrigan again in very bad ground. So we kind of have to put a line through that again as well. We didn't run Battleground because we thought the ground was way too bad for him, even though he had form in soft ground, but it was a bit worse than soft. So he's in good form since his first run in Newmarket. I was a bit disappointing as well. He just got disunited when he changed legs coming down into the dip, where he changed in front and didn't change behind. So we're thinking hope that he hopefully will leave that run behind him. So the plan at the moment is for two to run, and whether a third runs or not, I'm not sure. But at the moment, the two, Wembley and Battleground, are the planned runners.
And how happy are you with both? For Wembley fans, it's a little bit disheartening to have seen the two disappointing efforts so far this season. Has he shown you any indication at home that he's bouncing back?
Yeah, no, he's working well, and I was working well up to the other two runs, and is still working well. He was drawn a little bit out at the Curragh, and like I said, the ground was bad, and the pace was steady. It was a steady run guineas the first half of the race. So really, anything from the background, it's very hard to get involved at all. And I think Ryan kind of accepted it at a very early stage. So he's probably, the run was probably better than it looked. And we think and hope with better ground that we should see a better result.
On to the Wednesday, two entered in the Queen Mary Stakes. Heart to Heart is a big outsider, but Yet is a horse that will be on a lot of people's shortlists. A horse that Oisin Murphy was quite impressed with. He described the horse as a yoke that Aidan is sending over. He would also very much like to ride this yoke in the race, by the way, and that was a compliment.
Yeah, no, she's a big filly. She's lazy filly at home, so doesn't show an awful lot. Works more like a 6 furlong filly than a 5 furlong filly. But when she went to Dundalk, like, she showed loads of speed and everything, and she's a big, powerful filly. So the plan is for her to run in the Queen Mary by herself. She's a massive big filly for a 2-year-old. She's like a big 4-year-old, really. And because of that, I suppose she's just a big laid-back filly at home, so it's really hard to get a handle on her, other than what she did in Dundalk, really.
And the Queen's Vase is a race that you've got a phenomenal record in, including having a 1-2-3 in 2018, led home by Kew Gardens, who would go on to win the St. Ledger. Leading Light did the same thing, winning the St. Ledger for you as well. And a lot of very interesting entries as we currently look. Who are you looking at breaking that down to?
Yeah, it's possibly Kew Gardens' brother will run in it. He won a maiden at the Curragh early on in the season, and there's a possible that Kuipers could run in as well. He's a horse that ran in a derby trial in Lingfield. I think he finished fourth in that, and he won a conditioned race in Cork just before that. So at the moment, it looked like they're probably two main runners at the moment.
The brother to Kew Gardens, is that Wordsworth?
Wordsworth, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Excellent. All right. So he does look like a horse who'll come forward. What did you make? I know that you hold Sir Lucan, because you told us in the season preview, you hold Sir Lucan in very high regard. Presumably you weren't too disheartened by his defeat.
And he won in, no, he was disappointing in Sandown, and he won in Nav, and then after that he won a mile and five listed race. But he doesn't go to Ascot. He's kind of on a little break, and he'll be back for the autumn.
Okay, now the big race of the day is, of course, the Prince of Wales, and the great news that Love could indeed take her chance. But you've also got Armory, who ran an absolute blinder for you down under last year and has come back with a very impressive run at Chester. What's the current thinking for the Prince of Wales Stakes?
Yeah, the plan is thinking at the moment that both will run. Like, obviously, we'd love to wait for the Pretty Polly with Love, and then we're just afraid if we wait, the ground could go again at the Curragh, which often does. It can happen, and she's missed a load of races early on there in the season because the ground's been going. And we're thinking at the moment when this ground is right, we just get her started. We're very happy with everything she's doing, and it looks like she will run. And with Armory, obviously the plan was going to Chester, that he would come back there, and it looks like the ground is going to be nice, quickish ground, what he likes. So, and he's in good form since Chester as well. So at the moment, the two are going to run in it.
That's fascinating, and it's brilliant to see Love back. But I think Armory is a horse that you singled him out as one of the older horses to follow this season. 10 furlongs is really his trip, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, 10 furlongs fast ground is what he loves. And it looks like that he has went the right way since last year, so it will be interesting as right.
The Windsor Castle?
We might run a showcasing horse that won a maiden in Cork, a 6 furlong maiden. He might come back to that, and he'll probably be our only runner in that as well.
Al Mafi Coast?
Yes, that's the horse, exactly.
Excellent. Beautifully bred horse as well, out of a Footsteps in the Sand mare, if I can use my mouth words correctly.
Yeah.
Big news today. Yeah. Now, you were, again, extremely kind to us in the season preview where you talked about Tiger Moth, and you were saying that, no, we don't really have any intention of going back up to 2 miles. And yet, there were so many people, after you said that, still talking about him for the Gold Cup. The news today is that Serpentine has been supplemented for the race. So he disappointed in the Tattersall's Gold Cup. Was it just a case of that he badly needed that run?
Yeah, it was only a mile and a quarter as well, and we just had to get a run into him somewhere that we would just have to run out of time with him. And we just had to start him somewhere. And like, obviously, it was much shorter than he would have liked, but we're happy with him since. So, listen, it is an extreme distance, and you're never sure, but he was always a horse that never struck the issue, and we always thought stamina was never going to be one of his weaker points.
Yeah, you'd even instructed Emmett McNamara on Derby Day to ride him like he would stay a mile six.
Yeah, and obviously this is 2.5 miles, so it's a different team. But he is a horse we always thought would stay. So listen, it will be interesting. It's only his second run of the year, so looking forward to seeing him run.
And you've got Santiago and Aaron Levine in there as well. You've got such a phenomenal record in the race. It would be some irony if you were the man to stop John Gosden and Thady Gosden from training Stradivarius to win 4 Gold Cups, given that you did that with Yates.
But listen, it's a race that the lads love always and always have, and it's a race that they really love having runners in, and Aaron Levine stays well. San Diego has run in a lot of those races, and it's just a fascinating race to watch, and we're delighted to have runners in it, really.
Who would you say is your strongest chance out of the three? Is it Serpentine?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Obviously, Serpentine is a Derby winner, it's a very serious form going into a cup race with, and it will be very interesting to see will he get the distance, but it is an extreme distance, really.
Okay, it's to be the first Derby winner since, I think, for 40 years to win the Gold Cup, so that would be something else if he goes and does it. Coronation Stakes, you've got Mother Earth, I thought was terrific in France, brilliant performance at Newmarket, but she backed it up with a very brave performance in France as well. So she's clearly tough. But you've also got options like Joan of Arc. So what is the current thinking for the feature race on the Friday?
Yeah, we're thinking of Mother Earth and the filly that won the Irish Guineas. We're thinking of both of them going at the moment.
Empress Josephine?
Yes.
They'll be hard to split, Aidan.
We're very happy with Mother Earth's 2 runs, and obviously we were delighted with Emperor Josephine the last day.
And what about the Commonwealth Cup then? So you got Lipizzaner and obviously we know Battleground's going to go. So it's just Lipizzaner for the Commonwealth.
He would be our only runner, absolutely.
Once we come to the Saturday, we've got a fascinating renewal of the Hardwick Stakes. The Sir Michael Stout team are quite keen on one of their runners. Again, you've got the likes of Mogul in there. You've got Broom in there as well, only beaten ahead the last day. He's been a revelation this season, and he was a horse that you highlighted too. Is Broom going to be out again?
Yeah. We think the plan is to go there with Broom. That was the plan after the... he was going to step up into 1.5 miles for that. And that's what we think we're going to go. Obviously, Mogul and Japan are in there as well. They ran in Epson, and both of them seem to have come out of the race well. But at the moment, it looks like Broom and whatever else will run with him. But we think he's the main one at the moment.
Okay. You've got so many runners for the entire week. Who are you most looking forward to unleashing?
Oh, Gene, that's a tough one. And listen, obviously, Ascot is a seriously competitive place, and an awful lot of factors can come into it close to the time with ground and everything, So, listen, we're always, we go there, obviously, we have runners there, and you go there hoping that everything you run has a chance, but it's very competitive, and some horses will disappoint, obviously, we're really just going there and hopefully that they run well, and it would be great if we could have a winner or they keep running well, really.
Of your 2-year-olds, who has shown you enough to make you go, That's the one that really interests me.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Like, obviously, we have there's a brother to Broome that he won a maiden at the Corrie the other day. He's going to run in the Cheshire. So he was a very impressive winner. So it will be exciting to see what he does. And then the horse run in the Stole, the Churchill horse, it will be interesting to see whether were the Coventry, whether
the Acropolis whether
were pitching in. Yeah, so, and you know, so it'll be interesting to see with those horses, really.
Okay. I'm very, very, very excited about the Acropolis for the Coventry Stakes. But Aidan, again, thank you so much for your time. If you're stuck for a jockey, Oisin Murphy would like to make himself available to you. And I get 50% of the fee. So thanks very much. If you can sort that one out, that'd be much appreciated. But you're a gentleman and a scholar. And as always, thank you so much for your time for the Final Furlong podcast listeners. And the very best of luck to you and your entire team, to Ryan and all the team at Ballydoyle. You're very quick to praise everybody else when things go right, but you take all the blame when you feel something's gone wrong. And there's a reason that you stand on the precipice of taking Sir Michael Stout's record. So let's see how the week goes, but the best of luck to you, and looking forward to seeing how it goes for you.
Appreciate it, Emma. Thanks very much.
Packed show. Heavy hitter after heavy hitter. Really enjoyed that. Oisin Murphy, Aidan O'Brien giving you exclusive thoughts to... What the hell is that? This is not a bit. What is this thing? What is this sound? Where is it coming from?
Hello, Emmett. Hello, Final Furlong podcast listeners. It's the angler.
The elusive angler. Tote's new weapon. How did you get on this stream?
There's nowhere I can't get into. You know that. I'm always looking everywhere for a couple of angles to try and turn up a bit of value for tote punters everywhere.
This is literally end-to-end encryption. What are you doing? Working with Anonymous or something? I mean, I know you've got your work in the Sun, and I know you've got your fancy columns on tote.co.uk, and yeah, fair play. You know, you are crushing it with the winners. But how have you got on the podcast?
You don't really need to ask questions about how and more about why. And it's the why is because the biggest punting week of the flat season. We've got the biggest pools out there all week, and there's got to be some really juicy value. The UK tote punters might be able to just get away with a bit more than they'd get from the normal bookies this week.
That's a good point, actually, to be fair. There are going to be people from, with all due respect, from around the world betting in the Whirlpool, from Hong Kong, America. Now, America is different because we do have a large American audience, and we got Peter Fornatel on the show, and, you know, he knows his stuff. But there's a lot of countries that are going to be betting in, and Irish and UK punters, you know, Final Furlong podcast listeners are going to know what's up. So we can take advantage of all of that and the extra gravy that's going to be there. With that in mind, angler, with you sneaking onto this podcast in some way that I still can't quite understand, do you have any potential gravy lined up for us at Royal Ascot?
I'll be playing in the Quinella and the Swinger during the week. Nobody looks there, and I think you'll find that you can always find the best catches when you're looking where nobody's looking. But I've got a couple that I'll really be heavily with. I really do like Dragon Symbol in the Commonwealth Cup. I think he'll be the superstar sprinter that we need, the three-year-old sprinter that we need in this country just to get everybody excited again, especially if Batash is coming to the end of his reign. But we're all looking forward to seeing Batash again. The other one, I really do like Kinran in the Royal Hunt Cup. Whether the ground is going to be too quick for him, we'll have to see. We're a little way off at the moment, so I'm hoping that some of the forecast rain will come in, so it just takes the edge off.
You've put some interesting ones up there, Angler. What about the juveniles? They're always a fascinating puzzle, but at the same time, ones that we can't quite help get ourselves involved in. So where's the money going to be going?
Well, everybody loves the Wesley Ward runners when they come over, I think, because those couple of wins that he's had really stick in your mind. But that also sends a bit of a smokescreen. He gets a lot of TV coverage. He'll get a lot of coverage on the Hong Kong telly. I think they'll be short, and I think you want to look elsewhere. There has been money this week since the Acropolis won last week, and I think they're going to follow up quickly by Aidan O'Brien's team sending him across for the Coventry. That seems to be the go, I think, for me. Out of the two-year-olds, that could be the best one.
Starting to doubt your encryption skills, Angler, because Aidan literally just said that on the podcast. Fair enough. You've hacked in to an end-to-end encryption, so maybe you didn't hear the interview with Aidan, but he did just confirm that that's his only runner in the Coventry. And Sarah Lynham said that a couple of weeks ago on the podcast. She said, after he was beaten on debut, she said that the Acropolis is Aidan O'Brien's best two-year-old this season. So are you just completely stealing Sarah Lynham's work?
I think Sarah knows. And when Sarah knows, we all should take something to eat from that.
That's not a no, by the way. That's not a...
Never. I would always put forward my own work.
Of the shorties, then, who are you with? Who are you against?
You've got to be with Batash for one last year. Palace beer looks bomb-proof. In The Prince of Wales, Love are long-time targets of later in the year. Lord North is a big old horse that's hard to get fit, Goldstone's said in the past. He's had quite a break since Maidan. And I was really impressed with Armoury when it won on ground softer than he'd liked at Chester, where he came round the field to win quite cosily. I'm with Armoury against the Lord North and Love pairing.
Of the biggest price horses, who is the angler going to be rowing in with?
I do like the sprinter came from the dark, but I just don't know where he's going to run. And on fast ground, I would be with him wherever he turns up.
What's the best bet for the angler for Royal Ascot 2021?
The best bet, Dragon Symbol.
I was not expecting that answer. Where can we read all of your content throughout the week?
We'll be in the Sun during the week. We'll be on the Tote blog and via Twitter, of course. I'll be putting things up via Twitter. The angler at Hook the Value is my Twitter handle.
Am I allowed to reveal who you really are?
Very much like you may have picked out, not all of my work is my own. Sometimes I've got my ear listening in to various meetings and clandestine get-togethers of people in the know. And rather like a witness protection program, sometimes it's best to remain in the shadows.
It's like an AC-12 operation. Keep it quiet. The fourth man shall not be known until season 6 and possibly season 7. It's been a pleasure, Angler. An absolute pleasure. I'm sure that you will just appear on the show again at some point. It's not like we have to send out an invitation to you. You just, there you are, all of a sudden, out of nowhere. Just please don't do it when we're in the middle of an Aidan O'Brien interview again. That'd be fantastic. Thank you.
Thanks, Emma. Good luck.
I have no idea what that was. He does seem to have some good advice, to be fair. So if he ends up landing us some winners, then who are we to complain? And he is backing up what Oisin Murphy said. Now, maybe he just heard what Oisin was saying and is just repeating it, because he straight up stole Sarah Lynham's work. Like, he's basically admitted that, the angler. And remember, and I really hope you've enjoyed this edition of the show, but remember that you've got, weeks ago you were told by Sarah Lynham that on the grapevine, the rumor is that the best Aidan O'Brien juvenile is the Acropolis. And that was after he was beaten on debut. Subsequently goes to Listowel, wins really easily. And on this show, Aidan O'Brien gives us a world exclusive that his only runner in the Coventry out of all of the two-year-olds that he could run is just going to be the Acropolis. And even if he does run a second string who's 50-1, the Acropolis is number one. That's who Ryan Moore is going to be on board. Price collapse, courtesy of Aidan O'Brien, the Final Four on podcast. So you know where to come. Come to us. We got the 5 daily previews coming at you, releasing the first one on Sunday evening. More to come throughout the week. Top team lined up. Plus, you know where to go to place your bets. If you want the SPE guarantee plus 10% on top of all of your winnings at Royal Ascot and a pool that is going to be funded by the World Pool, which is essentially the Hong Kong market, the French market, the Australian market, the American market, all betting directly in to Tote. So there's going to be a lot of gravy out there. If you want that, the only way that you're getting access to it is through tote.co.uk, tote.ie, or an official Tote app. I'm sorry, if you're betting with a partner of the Tote or an affiliate of the Tote, they don't count in this conversation. SP guarantee and that 10% Tote plus bump. They are giving you free money. Reach out and take it over the biggest week of flat racing, Royal Ascot 2021. Tote.co.uk, Tote.ie, the official Tote app for Tote Plus. And there's also the Royal Ascot Tote 10 to follow mini game, which cannot wait to talk a little more about as well. So all that and lots more to come over the 5 days of Royal Ascot and loads of previews for you right here on the Final Furlong Podcast. Thanks to Oisín Murphy, thanks to Aidan O'Brien, thanks to The Angler, whoever you are, and thank you to you for the kind words on social media, for the DMs on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, the lovely emails. Thanks for the support. And if you like this episode, retweet on social media. And we got a competition that we're looking at doing. And you're going to want in. So we'll tell you more about that very, very soon as well. That's a identity of the Angler job. It's a closely kept national secret, state secret, if you will. Until Sunday. Thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. Stay safe. God bless.
The Final Furlong Podcast is proudly brought to you by Tote. Think you can't get better value? Think again. 10% bigger dividends when you bet direct with Tote Plus at tote.co.uk.